This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
17-year-old Molly Fancher wiped a bead of sweat off of her forehead while she toted her weight in upscale shopping bags. It was a humid Brooklyn afternoon in June 1865, but she had just a few last-minute purchases before she'd head up north to Boston for her impending nuptials.
Exhausted, Molly was ready to call it a day. She waved to the approaching trolley car. When it stopped, she hiked up her oversized crinoline skirt and politely excused her way to the back.
As the trolley neared her Brooklyn home, she signaled the conductor to make her usual stop. Molly reclaimed her bags and stepped down off of the tram. But before she could fully exit, the car sprung back into motion, violently tossing Molly to the hot street below. Her newly purchased goods scattered across the sizzling pavement.
As the car picked up speed, Molly's crinoline skirt became entangled on the iron hook fixed to the back of the tram. It was traveling too fast for her to get loose, and she was quickly swept off her feet. The streetcar dragged her through her own neighborhood.
A few minutes passed before the other pedestrians took notice of Molly's calamity. They shouted and waved to the conductor, trying to stop the moving tram.
Meanwhile, Molly twisted and thrashed, her dress turning to rope between her legs. She was pummeled with mud and stone before finally coming to an abrupt halt.
Pedestrians surrounded the girl, who was now completely unconscious, but somehow still alive. With a few broken ribs and a mild head injury, Molly was placed on bed rest and her upcoming wedding was canceled.
But nobody could have predicted that her injuries would keep Molly bedridden for the rest of her 67 years on Earth.
When our bodies fail, we trust doctors to diagnose the problem. But medicine isn't always an exact science. Sometimes it's a guessing game with life or death stakes.
This is Medical Mysteries, a Parcast original. I'm Richard.
And I'm Molly. Every Tuesday, we look at the strangest real-life medical cases in history and the experts who raced against the clock to solve them.
As we follow these high-intensity stories, we'll explore medical research that might solve the puzzle.
You can find episodes of Medical Mysteries and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Medical Mysteries for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Medical Mysteries in the search bar.
At Parcast, we are grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network.
Welcome to our one-part episode on Molly Fancher, otherwise known as the Brooklyn Enigma or the Fasting Girl. This week, we'll examine how Molly's trolley accident escalated into a dramatic series of epileptic spasms, trances, and paralysis. It also, allegedly, allowed her to survive without food for 14 years.
Born in 1848 in Attleboro, Massachusetts, Molly Fancher was the eldest of five children, two of whom never made it to adulthood. Her parents moved the family to Brooklyn when Molly was two. 5 years later, she unexpectedly lost her mother, Elizabeth, in a horse-riding accident.
Molly's father, James, remarried and abandoned his three kids from his first marriage. Young Molly fell to the care of her aunt, Susan Crosby, who loyally remained by her side through the following decades.
Despite Molly's traumatic personal life, as a teenager, she excelled at the Brooklyn Heights Seminary and was a favorite amongst teachers and classmates alike. She was a popular blonde, tall and slender, with a perfect complexion, an object of envy.
As an ambitious 15-year-old, Molly was eager and excited to graduate. But societal pressures became overwhelming, and soon she began to experience nervous indigestion. She would vomit up most foods and suffered from lethargy, frequent fainting spells, and weakness in the chest.
She also complained of terrible headaches and was prone to violent coughing fits. These ailments forced her to leave school only a few months shy of graduating at the top of her class.
After seeing a physician for her chronic indigestion, Molly was prescribed with a common antidote for that time, horseback riding lessons. 19th-century doctors believed that the rough shaking associated with equestrian sports would improve circulation and stimulate the gastrointestinal tract.
But Molly's physician could never predict that this adrenaline-boosting remedy would actually trigger other future ailments.
In May 1864, just 3 months before Molly's 16th birthday, she was out for a medicinal ride when she accidentally dropped the reins. As she reached forward to collect the ropes, something spooked her horse. The animal kicked its hooves in the air and threw Molly to the dirt below.
After being diagnosed with 2 broken ribs, Molly was sent home from the hospital. While her pain was likely severe, there wasn't much to be done, and these sorts of breaks typically healed on their own after 6 weeks of rest.
But that didn't stop the girl from constantly griping about a pain in her side, even after her ribs healed. And the complaining wasn't unmerited. Her affliction escalated to a hemorrhage in her right lung.
A hemorrhage, or severe bleeding, can occur either due to a puncture wound or the trauma of an internal organ colliding with a blunt object. A hemorrhage near the lungs, or hemothorax, can cause blood to pool against vital organs and impede a person's ability to breathe. Left untreated, this condition can become fatal.
According to the U.S. National Library of Medicine, hemothoraces can be caused by chronic diseases like cancer, tuberculosis, or conditions that impede the blood's ability to clot, like hemophilia. But Molly's doctors couldn't figure out how a broken rib could lead to a lung hemorrhage months later.
This wasn't her only mystifying symptom. Her headaches had also become far more frequent, sometimes growing so severe that her vision blurred. But with support from her aunt, she was eventually able to live with her new chronic pain.
In 1865, 17-year-old Molly found herself in better spirits with the arrival of a new suitor named John H. Taylor. Within months, John proposed and Molly accepted.
But in June of that year, Molly's bad luck had returned. Just days before her planned wedding, she was brutally trapped and dragged by that fated trolley car. Her extended recovery made nuptials impossible, and she canceled her wedding.
Now nursing a broken heart, Molly was bedridden, trying to recover in her Aunt Susan's home. It took 6 weeks before Molly claimed she could finally move around the room with the help of a chair or something to lean upon.
But this mobility was short-lived. The muscles in her limbs began to tighten and lock up, making it increasingly difficult for her to touch her feet to the floor. When she did, she experienced a terrible pain shooting up her spine. In September of 1865, Molly believed her spinal troubles had manifested themselves more severely.
Naturally, she became restless. She would wander around her room when she could, desperate to keep her body and mind occupied. Some days, she managed to help her aunt with menial, low-energy tasks like canning peaches.
But even this soon became too much for the feeble teenager. One afternoon, Molly's left arm dropped suddenly to her side. Her limb had become completely paralyzed. However, 2 weeks later, she regained use of it.
These symptoms may have been signs of multiple sclerosis, which the Mayo Clinic defines as a disabling autoimmune disorder. Antibodies, which are meant to protect the body from bacteria, viruses, and other foreign agents, incorrectly identify a nerve cell's outer layer, called the myelin, as a threat.
Over time, the immune system's attack leads the myelin to break down and fragment, leaving the nerve cells exposed and prone to damage. As signals from the brain to other tissues get interrupted, a patient may experience a wide array of symptoms depending on which nerves are affected.
People with this condition can suffer from numbness, tremor, blurry vision, and involuntary movement.
These symptoms aligned closely with Molly's initial afflictions. But the fact that she quickly regained use of her arm calls this theory into question.
Molly's sudden improvement could have been indicative of MS, as symptoms of numbness tend to come and go and are rarely disabling at such an early stage in the disease. In any case, it would have been impossible to know at that point, as MS wasn't quote-unquote discovered until 1868.
Her bizarre and sometimes temporary symptoms encouraged Molly's wealthy yet absent father to send the country's top physicians to her aid. They offered a series of diagnoses, none of which truly fit her ever more variable set of aches, pains, and other afflictions.
At the end of that year, another hemorrhage occurred in Molly's right lung. A council of specialists were called to examine her again, and this time they gave a terrifying prognosis. Molly wouldn't live through the winter.
On February 3rd, 1866, the inflammation in 17-year-old Molly's lung had gotten so bad, her primary physician, Dr. S. Fleet Spear, believed she wouldn't wake up the next morning. Her friends and family were summoned to her bedside to say their final goodbyes.
Reverend David Moore came to the house to pray over her. Surely this young woman was being taken from them too soon. So when Molly woke the next morning, her loved ones dubbed her survival a miracle.
Molly had a second brush with death 4 nights later when she began experiencing violent and recurring spasms. The Reverend was summoned once again to her bedside. And again, Molly did not die.
Instead, she fell into what she described as a trance state. Molly went completely immobile. Her Aunt Susan mentioned that the girl appeared dead. And when she woke from her episode, Molly was unaware of what had happened, as if she were emerging from a very deep sleep.
This medical oddity was unlike anything Dr. Spear had seen before. But between this new symptom and her recurring spasms, Molly was showing signs of what doctors today call epilepsy.
According to the Epilepsy Foundation, this relatively common condition occurs when a person has more than one seizure that isn't caused by triggers like low blood sugar or drug withdrawal. Seizures occur when normal electrical activity in the brain is disrupted.
In a healthy neurological system, cranial cells communicate with one another through brief electric charges. The body regulates these pulses with a sort of internal stoplight, signaling when each neuron can transmit and when it should stop. However, if too many cells release their electric bursts at once, the surge can disrupt healthy activity, leading the patient to lose consciousness, jerk about, or hallucinate.
Epilepsy has a whole host of causes, ranging from brain trauma to genetics. Today, it can be treated with anticonvulsants like topiramate or carbamazepine. These medications work by encouraging the production of gamma-aminobutyric acid, or GABA, which helps slow and regulate the transmission of neural signals. They also block the absorption of chemicals that stimulate electrical responses, including sodium and glutamate.
But these medications hadn't been developed yet in Molly's day, meaning an epilepsy diagnosis did little to help her treatment. Helplessly, her family waited while her trances continued.
Even when she woke up, it was only a matter of time before she'd slip into another trance. Her Aunt Susan wrote in her diary that Molly was unconscious and unable to communicate, sometimes for days at a time. And while she was in this stupor, Molly couldn't eat anything.
Despite Dr. Speer and Aunt Susan's ongoing attempts, Molly would not accept any type of sustenance. She vomited up anything that was force-fed to her. But even after days without food, Molly never showed symptoms of malnourishment.
A healthy diet consists of hundreds of vitamins, minerals, and carbohydrates. But at its most basic level, the body requires calories to maintain the functioning of cellular mitochondria. These structures produce a chemical called adenosine triphosphate, or ATP, which allows the cell to flex or move. Whether you're reaching for your phone, walking upstairs, or sitting still and allowing your heart to pump blood through your body, all movement is powered by ATP.
ATP is generated from glucose or sugar, which the body produces from carbohydrates. If a person doesn't eat enough, they will lack the ATP necessary to stay active and suffer from feelings of lethargy. Long term, someone might lose muscle mass, struggle to recover from even minor illnesses, and become emaciated.
A human being can typically go about 3 weeks without food before starving to death. But the first signs of malnutrition can appear within only 2 to 3 days. Somehow, Molly managed to go more than 3 days without eating and without demonstrating any of the telltale symptoms of starvation.
And out of this, the famous fasting girl was born. Word spread through the local medical community about her inexplicable symptoms, which only grew more severe over time. Her trances got longer, but Molly's body seemed to become even less dependent on food and drink.
However, Molly started to suffer from a multitude of other afflictions. On February 17th, she went completely blind. 2 days later, she seemed to fall deaf in both ears.
But on the 22nd, her senses returned. But only for a half hour before Molly lost her sight and hearing again. Then, the next day, she lost her sense of smell. Next, her jaw seemed to lock shut. She couldn't chew or swallow.
Molly was now living her everyday life without any of her senses and a complete lack of food. Her friends and family wondered how much longer she'd survive. They worried the doctor's prognosis that she had months or even hours left to live would come true.
But somehow Molly persevered, and soon these ailments actually allowed Molly to unlock a hidden door, a latent skill that no one would have anticipated.
The infamous Brooklyn fasting girl became a gifted clairvoyant.
Up next, Molly baffles the public and doctors alike as she continues to abstain from food and makes new psychic claims.
Now, back to the story.
In 1866, 17-year-old Molly Fancher was becoming well-known around New York City as a medical enigma. After being thrown off a horse and then dragged by a trolley car, she was plagued with a series of symptoms, including temporary paralysis and epileptic spasms, that left her doctors completely baffled.
Whenever her team of experts would come close to presenting a diagnosis, Molly would develop a stranger and even more puzzling new symptom to challenge their theories.
One of the hardest aspects to explain was her ability to go days, weeks, and even months without any sort of nourishment.
Shortly after Molly's first trance, her esophagus constricted in such a way that it became impossible for her to swallow any type of food.
Molly described to her biographer, Abram Daly, the organs of the throat became so rigid and so hard that when struck, the sound resembled that of wood or stone.
Once Molly's throat became paralyzed, it was impossible to feed her normally. So Dr. Speer attempted to administer beef broth, milk-based bourbon, and brandy cocktails via a nutrient enema.
For hundreds of years, medical professionals believed that patients who couldn't swallow could inject glucose solutions into the rectum, after which the nutrients would pass through the large intestine into the small intestine, and from there undergo the typical digestive process.
However, beginning in the mid-19th century, doctors began to doubt whether glucose could be forced backward through the digestive system in this way. A paper by Glasgow University's J.W.A. McKenzie noted that often, nutrients simply leaked back out of the patient's rectum rather than being absorbed into the body.
And in spite of Molly's doctor's hopes, the enema treatment failed to nourish her. However, it most likely helped her with dehydration.
When Molly's Aunt Susan was finally able to force a bit of food into her stomach, Molly reacted with extreme spasms. But she only claimed to be hungry once, in May 1866, when she accepted a small piece of cracker and a teaspoon of punch. This bite was the first food she'd eaten in over 7 weeks.
She seemed to suffer no ill effects from the meager diet, but her other symptoms only grew worse. Her physician, Dr. Speer, worked around the clock to diagnose her mysterious illness and treat her pain and suffering.
But there was no medicine, even in small doses, that Molly's body would accept. Anytime she was given medication, she immediately vomited and spasmed.
Molly's team of doctors were completely baffled by her condition. They poked and prodded her while they searched for answers to her body's gruesome riddle. She became something of a human guinea pig.
To perform the tests, her head was shaved and blistered. Then she was treated with electric shocks. Beginning in the 1700s, scientists discovered that electric jolts, when administered to cadavers, could trigger spasms and jumps. Later experiments on the living found that these sudden lurching motions could offset the pain of muscular cramping.
In Molly's era, famous electrotherapist T. Gale theorized that electricity could cure all medical maladies, from headaches to blindness. His experiments had some positive results in epileptics, and today, his findings serve as the groundwork for many medical treatments. However, the shocks had no positive effect on Molly.
And if that wasn't enough, her doctors tried other remedies, such as realigning her with the Earth's magnetic fields and placing her in steaming hot baths of herbal alcohol.
This latest treatment may have had its roots in aromatherapy, a belief that certain scents can soothe or treat medical conditions. While some fragrant plants have documented medicinal uses, there's little evidence that aromatherapy can cure chronic or severe illnesses. It certainly didn't help Molly.
In fact, none of the remedies seemed to relieve the young woman. She actually found that her convulsions and trances became a source of relief. They were the only way she could get her doctors to temporarily leave her alone. Soon, Molly truly believed that if her episodes stopped, she might die in the midst of an experimental treatment.
But her doctors were too intent on solving her riddles to think of her emotional state. As word of Molly's bizarre malady started to spread, she became famous outside of the medical community.
Women with robust health were often viewed at the time as unfeminine. Molly began to make headlines as she started to epitomize the Victorian idea of womanly fragility. And she wasn't the only one whose fasting illness catapulted her into the public eye.
Around the same time that Molly fell ill, a 10-year-old Welsh girl named Sarah Jacob became a celebrity after she began to fast due to her chronic convulsions. Despite her diet, many claimed that she still had clear eyes, rosy cheeks, and a healthy weight.
After she achieved fame, Sarah was watched around the clock by a handful of nurses who were instructed to feed her only when she demanded it. Sadly, the girl died 2 years later at the age of 12 from starvation. Her parents were convicted of manslaughter and sentenced to hard labor.
Decades later, an American girl named Josephine Marie Bedard aspired to gain recognition for her ability to fast for unusually long periods of time. She was approached by two different museums in the Boston area, hoping to put her on display as part of an exhibition.
Except that soon, Josephine was caught by a local physician who found a half-eaten donut in her overcoat pocket. Her claims were debunked, and her scheme became known to the public.
The public wondered, would Molly follow in Josephine's or Sarah's footsteps? Would she die of starvation, break records, and change the face of science? Or was Molly Fancher just another fraud?
Her infamy piqued the curiosity of skeptics like Dr. William A. Hammond, former Surgeon General of the United States Army and member of the American Neurological Association.
He was eager to challenge Molly Fancher and those who supported her testimony. He made a tempting offer, $1,000 US, equivalent to more than $15,000 today, to monitor Molly for 30 days under the supervision of the Neurological Society.
When Molly and her Aunt Susan declined Hammond's proposition, it only made him more suspicious. As Dr. Hammond started to wonder if Molly was a fraud, her claims and bizarre symptoms stretched the limits of scientific knowledge.
In May of 1866, Molly claimed she started to develop a second sight, a power or sense of seeing without the use of the natural organs.
Many spiritualist believers hopped on the young Molly's bandwagon, insisting that she could contact another plane of existence. She even began to regularly demonstrate her powers for guests and visitors.
Although she was blind, she was able to read the time on clocks or letters from her admirers. Soon, her friends began to playfully test her, quizzing her on the items they had in their pockets.
It wasn't before long that Dr. Hammond, Molly's number one skeptic, caught wind of the fasting girl's newest talent. He decided to publicly issue another challenge in the New York Sun.
He promised to enclose a personal check for a large sum of money in an envelope. He would let Molly touch the paper envelope as long as she didn't open it. If she could guess the correct amount, the date issued, and the bank from which it was drawn, then Hammond would donate the amount to a charity of Molly's choosing.
But once again, Molly refused to accept Dr. Hammond's challenge. She made excuses and refused to be in the presence of Hammond, who she believed was being gross and materialistic.
But this wasn't the only offer the girl refused. In fact, she never accepted paid work as a medium. She spoke frequently about distancing herself from the spiritualist world and proclaimed that she dreaded being categorized with clairvoyance.
The distaste for profiteering only strengthened her friends' and followers' faith. Ironically, the fasting girl had found other, more promising ways to profit from her condition.
Despite Molly's paralyzed right arm, which was now permanently stuck above her head, she was an accomplished crafter. She allegedly wrote 6,500 letters, prepared over 100,000 ounces of yarn, knitted an astonishing amount of embroidery, and created thousands of small wax objects.
As Molly's fame grew, people would flock to her home to offer her well wishes, see the fasting clairvoyant in the flesh, and buy her needlework and wax flowers. The family didn't charge admission, but they did set up a small gift shop in the entryway. This went on, turning a profit for a decade.
In 1875, 27-year-old Molly ensured her fans would keep pouring in as she developed an even more exotic symptom. Molly declared that after 9 years, she would no longer enter extended trance states. But now, she had taken on the identities of five other people.
Coming up, we delve into Molly's mental health and determine what caused her extraordinary condition.
And now, back to the story.
In 1875, 27-year-old Molly Fancher and her aunt and caretaker, Susan Crosby, had the public convinced that Molly was a fasting, clairvoyant medical marvel.
But there were still skeptics like Dr. William A. Hammond, who found Molly's antics to be deceitful. He even went as far as publicly accusing her of being a simulative hysteric.
During this time, hysteria was a common diagnosis for women. The term hysteria was actually coined by the ancient Greeks, more specifically Hippocrates, who derived the nomenclature from the word hystera, the Greek word for uterus.
In Hippocrates' time, doctors believed that the human body was comprised of four basic elements or humors: black bile, yellow bile, phlegm, and blood. They also believed that the uterus itself was like a living thing inside another living thing. If a woman didn't receive adequate sexual stimulation, her humors would become unbalanced, and her uterus would release toxic fumes, causing seizures and anxiety. In extreme cases, the uterus would even leave its position in the pelvis and travel around the body.
By 1775, scientists had rejected the theory of the wandering womb, but still believed women could suffer medically if they failed to fulfill gender norms. Dr. Jean Charcot argued that hysteria was a neurological disorder that could be treated through hypnosis, but he still maintained that it was a uniquely female condition.
Ironically enough, Dr. Hammond was one of the first to approach Molly's problem as a psychological rather than a physical ailment. Unfortunately, as no one took his pronouncement seriously, Molly didn't receive any kind of mental health treatment.
Nevertheless, after over 10 years of illness, she made a seemingly miraculous recovery. Molly went into her final month-long trance in the middle of 1875. Her limbs finally relaxed, her hands reopened, and her senses returned. But when she emerged, she believed she was 9 years in the past, in the year 1866.
And this wasn't the only new symptom. While Molly grappled with the gap in her memory, she began exhibiting multiple personalities. Her caretakers soon identified five distinct people, each with their own voice, cadence, memories, and opinions.
This made doctors wonder if Molly was now suffering from a form of dissociative behavior. According to the American Psychiatric Association, a dissociative disorder is a condition in which a person feels distant from their own body, behaviors, or memories, as if their own experiences are happening to someone else.
Oftentimes, this condition can stem from a period of trauma, which Molly had certainly experienced from the early death of her mother to her trolley accident and subsequent horseback riding injuries.
It could also manifest itself in forms of amnesia and detachment, which explained Molly's trance-like behavior from the last 9 years. If untreated, dissociative disorders can lead to self-harm, insomnia, depression, and suicidal thoughts.
What a dissociative disorder diagnosis couldn't explain were Molly's temporary bouts of sensory loss, her muscle contractions, and her inability to keep down food or water. So while her newest condition was explainable, doctors had only one small piece of Molly's puzzle. There still wasn't a clear picture of what she was suffering from.
Even more confusingly, Molly began eating again. Unfortunately, she remained bedridden for the rest of her 67 years due to her muscle atrophy after her 14 years of trances and fasts.
According to a study published in Medicine and Science in Sports and Exercise, muscular atrophy occurs when a person's muscles weaken to the point where they cannot be reliably used for movement. This is common in patients recovering from extended illness, especially if the person was malnourished during their convalescence.
Low glucose can make cellular mitochondria malfunction, leading the cell to weaken until it cannot move on its own. If this process occurs during a sedentary period, the body may redirect valuable nutrients to the muscles that are used more frequently, leading the unused muscular tissue to wither away. Molly's years in bed, refusing to eat, left her paralyzed even after she seemed to mostly recover.
In addition to her muscular atrophy, she continued to suffer from epileptic spasms and alternate personalities.
But Molly tried to maintain a positive attitude about her struggles. On February 3, 1916, 67-year-old Molly decided to throw a golden jubilee to celebrate her 50 years in bed. She even extended an invitation to President Woodrow Wilson, who regrettably declined the once-in-a-lifetime offer.
8 days after her spirited celebration, Molly Fancher finally passed away. The medical marvel had lost her latest battle with a recent bout of heart disease.
Even after Molly's death, speculation swirled about her strange life. How was she able to manifest psychic abilities? Why did her sight and hearing come and go? And the biggest question, did Molly Fancher really go 14 years without eating?
There's no medical explanation for how she could have avoided starvation, but the answer may lie in psychology. During Molly's teenage years, many young women suffered from a diet-related sickness called chlorosis that caused appetite disturbance, lack of energy, and depression.
This epidemic still exists today. It's only now known as anemia, a condition in which a person lacks the healthy red blood cells necessary to carry adequate oxygen to their body's tissues. And this deficiency can be caused by an array of diseases, including what many now believe Molly was afflicted with, anorexia nervosa.
This psychological disorder can lead an individual to starve themselves for days or even weeks on end, eventually damaging the connection between the brain and the digestive system, so a person can't tell when they're hungry or full. Patients can experience dramatic weight loss, mood swings, dizziness, paleness, and hair loss, among other symptoms.
Molly Fancher never quite fit the traditional physical description of someone who suffered from long-term anorexia. She never lost her hair or appeared emaciated. Her cheeks always seemed full. Her weight was healthy and she maintained her color. However, her seizures, catatonia, general weakness, and inability to function are all signs and symptoms of the malnourishment that sufferers of anorexia face.
Perhaps she lied about her ongoing fasts, or maybe she wasn't even aware of her own diet.
One of the critical errors made by Molly's doctors was their ongoing assumption that her disorder was solely a physical malady rather than some complex version of a mental disorder.
Without ever having met Molly Fancher, Dr. William Hammond might have actually given the most accurate and educated diagnosis. He stood by his assessment that Molly was suffering from a severe case of hysteria.
As we noted before, hysteria had its roots in sexist assumptions about the female mind and body. By the 1800s, it had become a catch-all term for women who acted outside the traditional range of women's behavior, including those with insomnia, anxiety, lack of desire for food, and a tendency to create trouble for those around.
In Molly's world, ladies were extremely restricted in their choices concerning how they were to live their lives and who they were to marry. For a rare few women, a life of feigned disability was preferable to the limited opportunities dictated by their gender.
Could Molly have developed or faked hysteria as a way of taking control over her own life?
Dr. Charles Ford tried to answer that question as Molly's posthumous therapist. He aimed to fill in the blanks that science had seemed to neglect.
He suggested that a teenage Molly had already been suffering from anxiety about her adult life. Her impending wedding to John Taylor, along with the trolley accident, may have been the icing on the cake.
Ford claimed that Even today, we frequently see conversion disorders before a scheduled marriage. Engagement brings up responsibility, sexuality, commitment. It feels more socially acceptable to get sick, and then the issue eventually dies away.
Conversion disorders were once thought to be purely psychological, but today they're studied in the fields of psychiatry and neurology and can be triggered after an emotionally or physically distressing conflict.
According to the Genetic and Rare Diseases Information Center, doctors don't fully understand how conversion disorders are caused, but it is believed that severe stress can reroute blood flow through the brain. When neural cells don't receive proper nutrients, their communication with corresponding body parts is disrupted, leading to physical symptoms like blindness, numbness or lack of control over body parts, seizures, and hallucinations.
In addition, conversion disorder has been known to coincide with dissociative identity disorder or other personality disorders, much like the one Molly developed later in her life.
In fact, Molly's bizarre symptoms, like her paralysis, blindness, and trances, check many of the boxes of conversion disorder.
These conditions can be triggered by trauma, and poor Molly had suffered her fair share of emotional and physical misfortunes. After losing her mother and two siblings, then being abandoned by her father, she was thrown from a horse and dragged by a trolley car.
Over the years, Molly's catatonic episodes might have become a way to separate herself from her own reality. This could actually explain why Molly claimed to be fasting when she wasn't. She could have been getting her nourishment while in her dissociative state and completely repressed those memories.
Molly's tragic upbringing, followed by her two traumatic accidents, had created the perfect biological environment for a disease, psychological or otherwise, to flourish. And Molly, too, found a way to thrive despite the circumstances.
It's impossible for most of us to fully empathize with Molly for the way her physical limitations restricted her mobility and freedom. In defiance of the hand she was dealt, she found a way to support herself, selling crafts to her adoring fans. In a way, the condition allowed her to take control over her own life, as opposed to many of the women diagnosed with hysteria over the centuries.
Thanks for listening to Medical Mysteries. For more information on Molly Fancher's life, amongst the many sources we used, we found the books The Fasting Girl by Michelle Stacy and Molly Fancher, The Brooklyn Enigma by Abram Daly extremely helpful to our research.
You can find all episodes of Medical Mysteries and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify. Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals, like Medical Mysteries, for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker.
To stream Medical Mysteries on Spotify, just open the app and type Medical Mysteries in the search bar.
And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network.
We'll see you next time.
Medical Mysteries was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. It is executive produced by Max Cutler, sound design by Dick Schroeder, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, Travis Clark, and Joel Stein. This episode of Medical Mysteries was written by Lori Gottlieb, with writing assistance by Kate Gallagher, and stars Molly Brandenburg and Richard Rossner.